Hello. And in this video, we're going to talk about the Milton model. So this is Milton model part two. In part one, we looked at the purpose of the Milton model, which we'll revisit very briefly in this one. And we also looked at the kind of main basic first 12 Milton model patterns, which were the same as the meta model patterns, which is understandable because the Milton model is the other side of the same coin. So as the meta model is about challenging non-specific language, the Milton model is about using non-specific language to get the results that you're looking for. So we'll have a quick look at just a quick review of the communication model and the purpose of the Milton model, and then we'll go through some of the patterns. So here's the NLP communication model, which I'm sure you're familiar with. So we've got information from the outside world coming in and being filtered through senses, beliefs, values, personal criteria, meta programs, experience, and so on. And that information is being deleted, distorted, and generalized, which then forms your internal representation or your map of the world, your perception of reality, which in turn affects state and physiology and therefore behavior and the results that you get. So if we're trying to change those results, and we can make those changes occur at an unconscious level, because remember, for all change and learning to be permanent, it has to take place at an unconscious level, then what we need to do is to bypass those filters so that information isn't deleted, distorted, or generalized. And the most effective, efficient information forms your internal representation, which then in turn affects state physiology and behavior. And the Milton model is a very good way of doing this. It's designed specifically to bypass those filters. And as we know, it was all modeled on the work that Milton Erickson did and the way that he operated as a hypnotherapist, with his ability to bypass those conscious filters and make deep, lasting, permanent changes. So let's have move on from the first 12 patterns and look at some of the kind of more advanced patterns, which aren't just the opposite side of the coin from the meta model. So here's the first one. We're calling this pace current experience. And this is really about describing somebody else's experience, which is the thing that we can see that's external to the individual. And so that we're aligned with their current experience. So by pacing their current experience, we're giving a really strong element of rapport. And a classic example of that is, when I start courses and I'll say things like, as you sit here in these chairs in this room on Tuesday and you listen to my voice, then what we're doing there is we are pacing their current experience, because it's undeniable in the sense that they are sitting in that room. They are sitting in these chairs. It is Tuesday and they're listening to my voice. So pacing current experience is a good way of just leading people into that rapport state that we're looking for, but also showing that you understand what it is to be like them, and we're all part of this thing together. The second one is the double bind. And this is where you give an impression of choice where there isn't actually a choice. So although somebody can make a choice about something, the outcome is still going to be the same. So for example, you might say to somebody, do you want to go out and eat Chinese tonight or Indian food? So we're still going out, but we're giving you the choice so that you feel like you're in control as to whether you are going to eat Chinese or Indian food, but we're still going out because that's the outcome that we're looking for. Another example from a sales point of view, which you may have come across before, is that would you like to sign the contract with my pen or yours? You're still going to sign the contract, but would you like to use your pen or my pen? So there's an implied choice and an implied element of control there. I used to use this with the children when they were younger, because trying to get them to do their homework was really difficult. But if we said to them, go and do your homework, then they'd be kicking against it. It'd be a real struggle to get them to go to their room and actually do the work. But if we said to them, we found that if we said to them, would you like to do your homework before The Simpsons or after The Simpsons? They'd invariably choose after The Simpsons. But then when the program finished, they would go and do their homework because they'd made the decision, they'd made the choice. So there was an implied choice there, whereas really there wasn't in terms of the overall outcome. So that's a double blind. The next one is conversational postulate. So this is where you put a question in the middle of a conversation, quite simply. It's usually a closed question. In fact, it's almost certainly a closed question, which may lead to an open question afterwards. I use this quite a lot in my training, and I will say something like, can you see where it might be beneficial for you to be able to use the Milton model in the work that you do? And the answer to that is almost certainly yes. Okay. So the follow-up question, which is a tag question, would be, so it would be useful, wouldn't it? Yeah. So how would it be useful? So getting people to think internally about what's going on for them. So the example there is, do you think this will be beneficial? Next example, extended quotes. So this is where when you're telling somebody a story or you're telling them something, you're describing something, you use quotes from outside of yourself. So from other people, because it's often easier to convince people to do something, to buy something, to understand something, if it's not you who's giving that information, but it's coming from someone else. And the classic example for me for that is, you know, we had a delegate on a course who. So it's not me telling you how that this stuff works. It's somebody who is similar to you. And I'll use quotes on that. And the purpose from using extended quotes is that every time I say something, you get a picture in your mind. So if I, as I just said before, we had a delegate on a course once who was thinking about using the Milton model in their work. And they'd spoken to somebody in the same office as them about this. And they'd said, you know, we've learned this stuff on the course about, it's called the Milton model, and it's a really good way of using non-specific language. And the other person said, well, not sure about that. So when I put it into practice, I found that it worked really, really beneficially, even though the person wasn't very sure about it. So the fact that I'm using extended quotes means that you get a picture of the person that I'm talking about, and then a picture of the other person that I'm talking about. So the more that you're thinking about different people, the more that your conscious mind is being distracted away from the information that I'm actually giving you. And that's becoming really beneficial in helping me to bypass those filters. So there's the example. The next is the selectional restriction violation. And this is, you know, obviously a complex jargonized phrase, but basically what it means is that it's you're putting thoughts and feelings to inanimate objects. So the classic example of that would be from the Second World War with the walls have ears. But also thinking about from a marketing point of view, we might say things like, evolution enjoys your custom. Well, evolution can't enjoy your custom because it's a business, it's an organization, it's a building. But what it does is it personalizes that entity, that organization, and helps you to feel part or feel connected to that as you would a separate person. So by choosing to use this selectional restriction violation, it's helping you to feel differently about inanimate objects. And ambiguity. Ambiguity is really useful because what ambiguity does is it makes you think about different understanding or different meanings for the same thing. And again, this is part of distracting your conscious mind so that the real important information can get through into your unconscious. And there are different types of ambiguity. An example here would be their visiting relations. So if you think about that in terms of what does that mean, is it the people, the they, who are visiting the relations? Or is it the relations who are visiting them? So the fact that you've got to hold both those things in your head that in that single phrase to make sense of it means that we're taking up space in your conscious mind to allow the unconscious mind to sneak past the gatekeeper, if you want to think it in those terms. So what we're trying to do is get that information into your unconscious without it being filtered. Next, we've got utilization, and utilization is about simply utilizing everything that the words and experiences and understanding that the client gives you. So reflecting back what somebody has said is really powerful. It demonstrates understanding in a really deep way. And we talk about this in terms of active listening as well, but it also helps you to lead people onto where you want them to be. So the classic example of this would be when a client says, "You haven't sold me on this." And you might reply by saying, "That's right. You're not sold on this because I haven't said the one thing." So the "you're not sold on this because I haven't said the one thing" is the utilization. I haven't said the one thing that would ensure that you were sold on this. And if I was to use that one thing that you were sold on, what would that one thing be that, that would sell you on this that I'm talking about? So you can see where we've gone from that initial pacing, "That's right, you're not sold on this," through a leading process to get them to tell you what it is that you need to say next to help to close the sale or to convince them or to influence them. And we've got embedded command. An embedded command is a really helpful, like all of these are, really helpful technique. And it's one that we don't use very often, but can be really, really powerful. And essentially, it does what it says on the tin. So you're embedded a command in the communication. So in the middle of a sentence, so it's not consciously noticed by the client. And there are ways of delivering this that, that are important, which I'll come on to into in a second. So for example, you might say, "Would you like to sit down?" Or, and I'll come back to that in a second, or the one that I use quite a lot in the start of a course, or at the end of the first session, would be, "I wouldn't expect you to be able to go away from here and utilize all of the tools and techniques you've learned on the course straight away." So the fact that I said "I wouldn't expect you to be able to" sounds on a conscious level as permission not to be able to go away and utilize it. But if I say, "I wouldn't expect you to be able to go away from here and utilize all the tools and techniques you've learned on the course straight away," remember that the unconscious mind doesn't process negatives directly. So what you're more likely to hear is "I would." And then if you notice the pause between, "be able to go" or "be able to," sorry, "and go away from here," the pause indicates at that unconscious level that there is something coming up, that there's a command following it. And also the tone of voice, the way that you deliver it, makes a difference as well. So if I say, "I wouldn't expect you to be able to go away from here and utilize all the tools and techniques you've learned on the course straight away," that's just a statement. Like, "Would you like to sit down?" is just a statement. But by changing the pause and the tonality, you can change those statements into commands. So, "I wouldn't expect you to be able to go away from here and utilize all the tools and techniques you've learned on the course straight away." Becomes more of a command. So in general terms, if the phrase goes up at the end, it's a question. "Would you like to sit down?" If it stays on the level, it's a statement. "Would you like to sit down?" Or if it goes down at the end, it becomes a command. And if you put the pause in there as well, "Would you like to sit down?" it becomes more of a command. And I've kind of exaggerated that a little bit to demonstrate. So embedded commands can be really, really powerful because on a conscious level, you're hearing a question or a phrase or a statement that's actually helpful. But at an unconscious level, what you hear is a call to action. So a command in that sense. So there we are. Some more Milton model patterns for you to get your head around and put into practice. And do take a little bit of practice. So try using them out. And be aware of them when you hear them around you, when other people use them. You'll certainly hear some of those with salespeople. Salespeople will use utilization quite a lot. They'll use double bind. Lots of sales training call this conditional close because it is, "Do you want to do it this way or do you want to do it that way?" So it's an implied choice, but there isn't really any choice in there. But think about how you can use it and just get some practice into playing with embedded commands and with the other combinations that we've talked about on this session here. So good luck. I'm sure you'll get some benefit from it.